put together this little shir based on this sefer that I'm holding here called Sari Alafim by Rav Ephraim Aaron Tversky. We learned it once on a Sunday. He's a Rav in Chicago in the illustrious Tversky family. So let's ask a couple of questions. And you'll see why this shir resonates with me coming back to the yeshiva. Okay, Vayu Chaye Sara Meya Shana Ve'esim Shana Ve'sheva Shanim Shnei Chaye Sara. Sara, as we know, Boker Tov, she's 100, and she's 20, and she's 7, she's 127. This year too. Sara's 100, and she's 20, and she's 7. And Rashi, everyone knows the famous Rashi. Rashi writes in source number 2. Why is it written in such a funny way? Why does it say Meya Shana, Esrim Shana, Sheva Shanim? So Rashi writes in the middle of the first line, source 2, Lekach Nichtav Shana B'chol Klal U'chlal. Why does it say Shana, Shana, Shana so many times? Lo Melecha, Shekol Echad Nidrash L'Atzmo. She was 127, that's the biological number of years that she lived, right? But she was also a person who was 120 and 7. What does that mean? Bas Kuf Kabas Chaf L'Chait. When she was 100, she was like a 20-year-old with regard to sin. We know from Chazal that a person is not held accountable bidei shemayim until they're 20 years old. That doesn't mean, baruch, that doesn't mean you can do whatever you want.
Until you're 20 years old?
It doesn't mean you can do whatever you want until you're 20 years old, but that means there's a certain degree of forgiveness that's given to a person until you're 20 years old. You're not fully held accountable. Right? Ma bas chaf lo chata, or like you say, as a 20-year-old, she hadn't sinned, again, because of that. Sharei ena bas onshin, because there's no onesh bidei shemayim until you're 20. Af bas kuf lo chet. So too, when she was 100, she was also as innocent in terms of her averus. U bas chaf kabas zayin liofi. And at 20, she was like a 7-year-old with regard to beauty. Most of us probably would think that a 20-year-old young woman is more beautiful than a 7-year-old girl. But it means her beauty had a certain innocence to it. Like the sweetness and the innocence of a cute 7-year-old. Okay, so that's 120 and 7. And then the pasuk even ends, Shnei Chaye Sara Kulan Shavin Latova, Rashi says. All of her years were equally good, which of course should bother us very deeply because Sara went through a lot of stuff in her life. Sara's was kidnapped at least twice in her life. That's a pretty big deal. What do you mean, Kulan, Shav, and Latova? All of her years were equally good? That's hard to understand. But the Medrash, in source number 3, tells us something very interesting about Sarah. Vayu chaye Sarah mea shana. The Medrash quotes a pasuk in Tehillim. Yodea Hashem yemei simimim, v'nachalasam le'olam tia. Hashem knows the days of the tamimim, of one who's tamim. The Medrash says, "Kishem shehein tamimim, kach shnosam tamimim." Listen to the words of the Medrash. The Medrash says that just as they are tamim, so too their years are tamim. In other words, just like they themselves are complete tamim. How would you translate tamim? Wholesome, complete. Just like their personality is complete, so too their years are complete. Why is 127 years complete? What does that mean? Sarah's life was complete? And what is Tmimus? Why is Chazal, when they look at the life of Sarah, they say, the lesson we learn from Sarah is what? She's 127. This is the pasuk that comes to mind when you think of you start learning Parshas Chayei Sarah, and this is what Chazal and the Medrash, what they thought of. This reminds you like what David HaMelech says, Yodei Hashem Yemei Simimim. Hashem knows the days of the Tzmimim. Just like they're complete, so too their days are complete. Again, Rashi told this, Kulan Shavin Latova. There was a certain wholesomeness to the life of Sarah. That may have been even a little bit different than Abraham. Let's pause for a second. Let's talk something out. I don't remember if we ever spoke this out. The Rambam says that Avram Avinu was an idol worshiper when he was a kid. Avram Avinu was not just the child of idol worshippers from an idol worshipping society. Avram Avinu himself was an idol worshiper. Did we ever discuss this? I'm trying to remember. It says in the Rambam explicitly, it's in Hilchos Avodah Zarah, Perek Aleph, Halacha Gimel, The Rambam says that Avram came from a place of avodah zarah, but who avod imahem? Avram worshipped idols. Avram worshipped idols, and that's why. What do we say on Pesach and Haggadah? We say mitchila ovdei avodah zarah, hayu avoseinu. Our ancestors, our avos, were idol worshippers. So we would normally read that line in the Haggadah, right? Shmuel Matisya. What would we think? We would think, oh, not our ancestors, like not Avram, right? Avoseinu, Avram's father Terach was a bad guy. He worshipped idols. No, not true. Mitchila ovdei avodah zarah hayu avoseinu. Avos means Avram Yitzchak Yaakov. Right? So which of our avos actually worshipped idols? Avram. Avram worshipped idols. The Rambam says so explicitly. He came from a place of idol worship. Hu avadi mahem, and he worshipped with them. He was an idol worshipper. What's strange is that the Zohar says on the Pasuk in our Parsha, in this week's Parsha, Perachav Dalet Pasuk Aleph, it's not on the page in front of you, V'Avraham Zakein Ba Bayamim, V'Hashem Berachas Avram Bakol. Avraham Zakein Baba Yamim. Avraham was old. Baba Yamim, he came with his days. You know what the Zohar says? Yonah Eden, you know what the Zohar says on Baba Yamim? It says that Avraham came with all of his days. In other words, every day of his life was what? Was accounted for. Every day was a success. So yes, Lubavitch Rebbe, I don't get it. Well, which is it? Was he an idol worshiper? Was Avram Avinu an idol worshipper, or was Avram Avinu's life perfect? Avram Zakein Baba Yamim. Which one was it? Now the truth is, I want to point out something very interesting. We just said that Sarah lived 127, and Kulan Shavan Letova, her life was, all of her years were good, and the Medrash says that what? It calls her a Tamim. She had Tmimus. Just like what? Just like her actions are Tamim, so too her years are Tamim. Her 127 years were very successful. So I'll show you something so interesting. How old was Avram Avinu when he passed away? 175. How old was Avram Avinu when he became from? So different shitos in Chazal. Right? Many of us have heard that Avram was 3 years old when he first discovered Hashem. All right, that's not such a big chizik for us. But there's other shitos that he's 40 years old. There's a shita that Avram's 48 years old. There's an important shita that Avram Avinu was 48 years old when he discovered Hashem. Now, that's a big chizik for us. Right? Even 40 is not a chizik for me anymore because I'm older than 40. But 48, I mean, I'm still way ahead of Avram Avinu. That means Avram Avinu was worshipping idols not only when he was a little kid. He worshipped idols through high school. He worshipped idols through college. He worshipped idols through graduate school. He worshipped idols for many, many years, for decades, for 48 years. So now think about it. If Avram Avinu became from at age 48, so how many years was he from? Passed away, you said, at 175. What's 175 minus 48? 127. It's Skavaldic. So in other words, Avram and Sarah, right, both had 127 good years. Avram had 48 interesting years, questionable years. And then he had 127 good years. What's the secret of the number 127? So if everyone's nice, I'll tell you on Hanukkah. If you remind me. If you remember on Hanukkah and you remind me, I'll tell you, I'll show you the secret of 127. Why Dafka 127 years for Avram and Sarah, the first Jewish couple, had to Dafka live 127 years? Oh, what's the pshat in that? There's a big secret in that. Okay, but I'm just trying to point out that look how Hashem had to realign it. You want to add, then give me 1 second. So now, says Lubavitch Rebbe, so I don't understand. So was Avram an idol worshiper for 48 years and then he became Frum? And if so, so then why does the Zohar say Avram Zakein Ba Bayamim? He came with his days. Every day was a success. Lubavitch Rebbe Chevet Lubavitch Rebbe says such an important yisod. Listen to this. The Rebbe said the following. He said that when were the Jewish people first introduced to the mitzvah of tefillin? So the last pasuk in Parshas Bo talks about tefillin, right? As an expression of the strong arm with which HaKadosh Baruch Hu took you out of Mitzrayim. You should wear tefillin on your arm and tefillin between your eyes, which of course means on your head, between your eyes. So the Lubavitch Rebbe asked a very simple question. What happened the next day? Parshas Bo, we're still in Mitzrayim. We're not even out of Mitzrayim yet. Kadosh Baruch Hu says, I want to just mention that you should start wearing tefillin on your arm and between your eyes. So where did the Jewish people get tefillin the next day? Ben, do you have the question? Where did they wake up the next morning? How did they get tens of thousands of pairs of tefillin the next morning. Who made all the tefillin? Is there a medrash that they fell out of the sky? I never found that medrash. Was there a sofer who had incredible ability to write pairs of, where did they get the animal hides? Where did they get the black straps? How did they make tefillin the next day? Rabbi Moshe gave them a mitzvah. Mitzvah's tefillin. How did they wear tefillin the next day? No, what's the answer? They didn't. They didn't. Ah, so then the question becomes, so then why did the Kodesh Baruch Hu introduce them to a mitzvah that they couldn't do? No? So they could want to do it. And it was the Kodesh Baruch Hu's way of saying that what? That sometimes in life you're going to encounter ideas that you value, that are aspirational, and you're not able to do it right now. You can't do it this second. Right? There's 2,711 pages of Shas. You can't do that all in 1 second. You can't even do it all in 1 day. Right? It's a lifetime of work for some people. Some people never get there. Some people get there in 7.5 years with Daf Yomi. Some people finish it once in their life. Some people never finish it. But it's a value. It's a goal. Finishing Shas is a goal. Wearing tefillin is a goal. Hashem says to Klai, so I want you to know there's a goal, there's a value called wearing tefillin. You're not able to do that right now because of the context in which you're living, i.e. Mitzrayim. Hashem says, fine, I have no tainas on you. I just want you to know about the concept of tefillin, and when you're able to do it, I expect you to do it. In other words, Hashem says, I want you to be comfortable with an idea as a goal, at the same time, in an honest way, not in a fake way, like, yeah, I don't really care enough to implement it in my life right now, but in an honest way to say, I really can't do this right now. They could not wear tefillin that next morning. They didn't have tefillin. So why would Hashem tell them about something they can't do? To teach them, file it away. File it away for when you're ready to do it, when you're able to do it. Don't be so full of yourself and don't be so haughty to say, you know what, I can't do it, I don't care about it. Don't care about it. Respect it, even if you can't yet do it yourself. So the Rebbe said, that's the Pshat of Avram Avinu. How could it be that Avram worshipped idols for maybe 48 years and yet every day of his life was perfect? How could it be that Avram Zokin Baba Yamim, all of his days were a success? Because it's such an important Yisod. Hashem's not upset at a person for something that he couldn't control. In other words, Avram was born in an idol-worshipping society. For a period of time, that's all that he knew. You think God's upset at him that he worships idols as a young man or even... maybe even through, you know, his high school career, when he went to Or Kasdim public school in Haran University, you think Hashem was upset at Avram Avinu? That's what did he know? Eventually, he had the maturity to look at the world and to choose differently and to challenge society, and then he went forward with his life. In other words, they're both true. He was an idol worshiper, and Hashem also said that every day of your life was what? Was appropriate, was successful. Baba Yom, every day was accounted for. You know why? I don't have any tainas on those days, God says. How many people get stuck moving forward because of what? Because of what they did back then. So that's the var. That's the yisod. Okay, Yona Eden, what do you want to say?
Why did Avram wait so many years to get a circumcision?
Good question. What do you think?
Not
a good enough answer, because the Gemara says in Maseches Yoma and in Maseches Kedushin that Avram kept Kol HaTorah Kula before there was a Torah. So why didn't he give himself a bris? So one of the answers that I think is poshut and true is that we have a concept in Shas called what? Gadol HaMetzuva Va'osa Mimi She'eino Metzuva Va'osa. What does that mean? Greater is the reward for what?
Submit, that's something that's commanded. Not
right. If you opt in on your own, you get less reward than if you're commanded. Why is that so? You would think that someone who opts in on their own is doing something even better. You're choosing it. Instead of waiting for your parents to tell you to take out the garbage, you take it out on your own. I think that's even better. No? What's the Torah psychology of it? Okay, you could say it like that. What else can you say? There's another psychological piece that Tosos brings, yeah?
I don't think it's that you're like that you're willing for, but also you get the myth of you doing
it. Okay, but I'm just saying in general. Yeah, there's
Someone's mad at you, it's harder to bring yourself to do
exactly. It. Exactly. Tosos says that once there's a tzivoy, then the Eitzahara tries to stop you from doing it, because no one likes to be told what to do.
That's it.
All right? Once you're commanded, so then there's a part of you that wants to reject it. There's a part of you that wants to reject it. once you're told to do it. Right? So you get a greater reward. You get a greater reward once you're commanded and do. Now, Avram could keep any mitzvah that he wants with the hope that maybe one day he'll be commanded. He can keep Shabbos before he's commanded. Right? He can keep kashrus before he's commanded. He can wear tefillin before he's commanded. Again, making a lot of assumptions about what it meant for Avram to keep mitzvahs, but let's say Avram did all those things before he was commanded, fine, no problem. He'll continue to do them after he's commanded. But bris milah, how many tries do you get to do a bris milah? Hopefully one. Right? So for Avram to do it before he's commanded, and then he gets commanded, give yourself a bris milah, achaval. If I would have waited, and I would have been mitzuva v'osa, then I would have gotten a greater reward. So he dafka waited for milah, since he can only do it once. He waited till he was commanded, and then he did it because Godol hamitzuva v'osa, yimishena mitzuva v'osa. That's why he delivered the milah. Yeah.
Why was there an account of Sarah being taken away both times? Saying she's my sister. It's different.
Why did the same thing happen twice?
Yeah. When I was reading the parsha,
okay. Good question. Good question.
We could explore it.
We could explore that together. Okay, well, let's come back to our topic. I'm not sure. I'm not. I mean, there's a few parts of what you're asking, but let's save it for a conversation after. Okay. So what do we know so far? So we have a pasuk, we have a couple of Rashi's, we have a medrash that says that Sarah has this inin of tmimus, and again, I just gave you that side point about Avram also had a very wholesome life, even though the first 48 years were not. And again, the fact that he became frum at 48 and lived to 127. Well, 175 means that he also had 127 holy years. But the question I want to ask you, what is tmimus? What exactly does it mean Sarah's life was tmimus? Yodei Hashem yemei tmimim. What does it mean that Sarah's life was a life of tmimus? Question number one. Okay. Question number two, there's a fascinating Zohar. There's an amazing Zohar commenting on this week's Parsha. Listen to what the Zohar says. The Zohar notices something extremely interesting. Extremely, extremely interesting. The Zohar says in source number 4, V'hachi pasach rav misifto, man di'ihu ze'er ihu rav, man di'ihu rav ihu ze'er. Man, the one who is ze'er, who is small, is in fact big. And man di'ihu rav, the one who thinks he's big, ihu ze'er, is in fact small. Sounds like it's a vart in gaiva and anava, in haughtiness and humility. Person who carries himself in a humble way is in fact a very big person. Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe Rabbeinu is the greatest. And he's also on of Mikolatam. A person who carries himself as being Rav, he's a big shot, he's probably just what? Overcompensating for the fact that he has low self-confidence and he's projecting that he's a big guy. And really he's a very small person. And that's why he needs other people's, you know, kavod in order to build him up. How do we see that in the opening pasuk of the parsha? The Zohar says something so interesting. The Zohar says, if you look at the numbers when it describes Sarah's life, 127, so you'll notice, says the Zohar, "Dichsiv ayiyu chaye Sarah meya." When it says the number 100, which is a big number, "Diyu chushban rav ksiv bei shana." When it says the number 100, which is a big number, it uses the singular shana. Interesting. But when it says sheva, which is a small number, when it says 7, 120 and 7, when it says 7, what does it say in the pasuk? Sheva shanim, in the plural. So by the big number, it uses the singular shana. And by the small number, it uses the plural shanim. So from here we learn, that something that looks big is sometimes small, and something that looks small is sometimes bigger. Interesting. It's a good Musar lesson. It's an interesting pshat in a pasuk as to why sometimes it says shana and sometimes it says shanim. I'm sure there's a grammatical explanation as well, but this is what the Zohar saw in this pasuk. But the question is, why Dafka teach us this yisod by Sarah? Meaning, why did Hashem put this lesson over here in the context of the years of Sari? HaKadosh Baruch Hu could have taught this anyway. Why did the Zohar pick up on it by Sarah? What's the lesson? How does it relate to our understanding of who Sarah was and the life of Sarah? Okay? That's the Zohar and the question we want to ask from the Zohar. Another famous medrash in our Parsha, which we'll ask two questions on. And that is the Medrash that says in source number 5, Rabbi Akiva Hayyoshe Vidoyresh Vatzibor Misnamnim. Okay, this is the biggest chizik for any Rebbe. Why? Because Rabbi Akiva was once giving a shiur and everyone was falling asleep. So I don't have to feel bad if anyone ever falls asleep, because I know I'm much smaller than Rabbi Akiva. And if Rabbi Akiva couldn't keep people awake in the shiur, I don't have to feel bad. I can't keep. Right? It's a big chizik. So Rabbi Akiva was once giving a shiur and everyone was falling asleep. You've heard this medrash before? Anyone's heard this medrash? Bikesh la'oran. He wanted to wake them up. So he went off on a tangent to try to wake everyone up. Amar, he said, he asked the kash, he said, Ma rosa Esther shetimloch al sheva v'esrim v'meya medina? Why was Esther zochet to rule over 127 provinces? So we keep it up. Students woke up, oh, that's an interesting question. Why 120? Why was Achashverosh's kingdom 127? What does that mean? Elatavo Esther shahaisa basbita shel Sarah. So says Rabbi Akiva, I'll tell you. It's because Esther, let Esther, the one who's a great descendant of Sarah, shachaisa meyav esrim v'sheva, who lived 127 years, v'timloch hameyav esrim v'sheva medinos. Let Esther, who's a descendant of Sarah, who lived 127 years, so too Esther will rule over 127 medinos. What's the question? Two questions. Number one, what on earth is the connection between Sarah's 127 years and Esther's 127 provinces? And question number two, of course, is what of all the things that Rabbi Akiva could ask his students to try to wake them up, why was this the question? Of all the things, why did Rabbi Akiva pick this inyan of Esther and Sarah to try to wake up the students who are falling asleep during shiur? Those are the questions. Yeah? You want to answer?
Can I offer a suggestion?
Yeah, go for it.
Maybe like the provinces were like Tamim, like she fully controlled every single province.
Okay, so you're saying just like Achashverosh ruled the whole world, right? So too, it's related to Esther, who we explained, her 127 years were also very Tamim, very wholesome and complete. It's a great answer. We're going to go deeper as well, but that's a great answer. Right? Maybe he's trying to draw a relationship between, and maybe you could say, and we'll see, we're going to go in a very different direction, but maybe Rabbi Akiva was trying to say, if you fall asleep in shiur, then if you even miss one shiur, then you know, the Zman's not going to be complete. Right, look how Esther's life was complete. Look how Sarah's dominion was complete. If you fall asleep in shiur, you miss it. So, well, comes the shiur tomorrow. But maybe tomorrow's a different shiur. Right, maybe you've lost out on that sense of tmimus. Okay. Yeah, that's the point. Meaning, it's a funny connection. 127, 127. What's the connection here? Okay, fine. So to answer all of this, let's learn an amazing yisod from Rav Yitzchak Huttner, Zatzal, the Pachad Yitzchak. And to do so, before we get there, we have to learn a Gemara in Bava Basra. Beautiful little Gemara in Bava Basra. When the second Beis Hamikdash was being refurbished, the second Beis Hamikdash was being given its beautiful design. So the Gemara says in source number 6, Mi shelo ra'a binyan hordus, lo ra'a binyan na'am yamav. If you didn't see second Beis Hamikdash with the beautiful design that hordus built into it, you never saw a beautiful building in your life. You may have seen some nice shuls, you may have seen some fancy hotels, you may have seen some big stadiums, you may have seen some beautiful homes, but you've never seen a beautiful building if you didn't see the Beis HaMikdash during the period of Hordus. But my Banya, says the Gemara, how was it built? With what did he build it? Amarabo ba'avne shisha u'marmara. He built it with some type of green and white marble. Okay. Ika the Amri, some say ba'avne kuchla shisha u'marmara. Some say that it was blue, and it was green, and it was white. Okay, also interesting. Apik safa va'ayil safa, and he built it in such a way that it would go out and it would go in. In other words, it looked like it was stacked in some way. Ki hechi dinakabel sida, so that it would be able to be plastered for support. Again, I don't exactly understand the structure in terms of the building, but that's what they did. Savar l'mish'aye b'dahava. So after he built it, he had this idea, you know what? Maybe we should coat it in gold. Maybe we should cover the whole thing in gold. Amru le Rabbanan, the rabbi said, no, leave it exactly as it is. Yeah, we should leave it like this with the green and the white and the blue marble. Yeah, leave it this way. The rabbi said, Shavke, leave it alone. Dehachi shaper tvei, because it's more beautiful like this. It's more beautiful, the colorful marble, right? The colorful marble is more beautiful than what? Than coating it in gold. Why? Dimichze ki idvosa diyama. Because it looks like, Rashi says, gale hayam. It looks like the waves of the ocean. Don't cover it in gold. You have to cover it in gold to make it extra shine. No. Appreciate the beauty of the marble. The marble's beautiful. The marble, the green and the white and the blue. And again, the way that it was built with protrusions and parts sticking in, sticking out. Leave it this way. It's more beautiful this way because it looks like the waves of the ocean. It looks like the waves of the ocean. However, there's an old problem that goes back to creation of the world. There's an old problem. It's a problem that we're sort of a part of in our own way. You know, different people have different things in this world. The Gemara says in Maseches Nida that before a person comes to this world, a lot of things are determined. Some of you were created smarter than others. That doesn't mean you're going to use your brain better than the person. Maybe the guy who's not so smart will use his brain to greater capacity than the guy who's really smart. Maybe the guy who's really smart will use his brain to do all sorts of evil things with his creative mind. I don't know. But the reality is that we're born with different things. Some people have different portions in this world, and sometimes we're jealous of someone else's portion. Gemara says, someone's rich, someone's poor, someone's smart, someone's not as smart. V'chulu v'chulu. Tzadik v'rasha, that's not determined. That's up to you. You take a shvuah before you leave your mother's womb. Tihi tzadik v'al tihi rasha. Be a tzadik. But in terms of, tools, skill sets, we're all given different things. So imagine the moment, if you will, when HaKadosh Baruch Hu divided between the upper waters and the lower waters. Vayasa Elokim es harakia vayavdel. HaKadosh Baruch Hu divided between the water that gets to be up top and the water down below. And even though Hashem is here, Hashem is there, Hashem is truly everywhere, but we do have a notion of Hashem kind of being above and we're down below. So imagine that moment that some water got invited, so to speak, above, and some water was stuck down below. And how unfair they felt that was. And how frustrated they were to what? I don't want to be a lower water. I want to be the water on high. I want to be the guy who's, I want to be the one who has an easier time being close to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The Tikkuni Zohar writes in source number 8, a phrase that again, that Sifrei Chassidus have expounded a lot. It has everything to do with which holiday? When does the lower water get its revenge? Sukkos. Why? Because the Nisach HaMayim, right? We take the water, we pour it on top of the Mizbeach, and the water feels like, finally got my day to be up top, to be part of the service of Hashem. But when the waters were divided, says the Tikkuni Zohar, where it's bolded in source 8, the lower waters felt cheated in a certain level, and the famous expression that we find here in the Zohar is what? Where it's bolded, Anan bi'inan lemehebe kadam malka. Anan ba'inan. We want Lemeheve, to be Kadam Malka, to be before the king. It's not fair. Why should I be lower waters? I want to be upper waters. Everyone was screaming, we want to be on top, we want to be on top. And water is always trying to what? Is always trying to somehow get back on top. And where we see water trying to rise up, and the water trying to what? To draw close to Hashem. Obviously we help the water out through the Nisach HaMayim on Sukkos. But the example of the waters striving to be close to Hashem is what? Is what? I'm talking more simple even. Is what?
Dew,
rain, evaporation. What was the base of Mikdash made out of? They wanted to cover it in gold. And they said, leave it alone because it looks like waves. Leave it alone because it looks like waves. Waves are gevaldik. Waves are amazing. You know what waves are? How you stare at the ocean, it's like so captivating. You can like watch it forever. What is it? What are we captivated by? Is it the expansiveness of it? Is it just the beauty of it? Is it the sound of the water? What your neshama is so drawn to when it sees waves? You're standing watching, looking out over the ocean and you see the waves. You know what's so captivating? What your neshama says is, wow, hold on a second. Look at those waves. Look how they keep trying to lift themselves up. All right? Forget Sheva Yipol Tzadik for come. You know, a tzadik falls down seven times and gets back up. The waves over and over and over again. They keep trying to pick themselves up. They're like reaching, they're trying. I want to be before the king. And they try to pick themselves up. They fall back down. They try to pick themselves up. And they fall back down. They try to pick themselves up. And they fall back down over and over and over again. That's awesome. Because for a lot of people, you get stuck in your own head and you don't pick yourself back up. You don't pick yourself back up. A Yid once came to Shlomo Volbi, the great Mashkiach, and he was complaining about how he was feeling frustrated, he was feeling stuck. Rav Weinberger told us this story, I hope I'm telling it right. But the punchline is that Rav Volbi said to the guy, he said, the Pasuk in Mishlei says what? Rabos machshavos b'lev ish, v'atzas Hashem hitakum. What's the Pasuk Pshat? Person has all sorts of plans, grand plans, right? Person has all sorts of grand plans, but the plan of Hashem is the one that's going to ultimately last. It's the one that's going to stand. But Rav Volbi taught this guy, he said, no, read the pasuk like this. You have all sorts of machshavos, you have all sorts of things, your mind is, you're ruminating on all sorts of ideas and it's stopping you from being able to move forward. Rabos machshavos b'levish, you have lots of ideas in your head. Right, about why you can't, why you shouldn't, why you're not worthy, etc., etc. Va'atzas Hashem, and Hashem's advice to you is what? Takum. Pick yourself up, and go weiter. You feel knocked down. Takum, stand up and go. Stop lying there complaining about why you're not good enough. Just go. Atzas Hashem, hi takum. Pick yourself up and go. And that's the chizik of the waves. That's what makes waves so gewaldic, because they're the lower waters who are always trying, desperately trying, to pick themselves up. So turn over to the second side of the page. Rav Huttner, in the Pachad Yitzchak on Purim, in the back, in the Kuntres Rishimos, in Os Yudal, it has a piece in Yiddish. Okay? Ariel Avram, how's your Yiddish?
I can read.
Yeah? Do it. Thank God. I'm safe. Okay, I'll let me tell you the pasuk he's commenting on. The pasuk is a pasuk where, in Tehillim, Ata Moshel Begeus Hayam, Biso, not Bishav, not Bishav, Biso, like Parshas Naso, Biso Galov Ata Tishabachim. Let me tell you the Pasha Pshat and the Pasuk, and then I'll tell you what Rav is going to do with it, and then Ariel is going to spare me incredible embarrassment by reading the Yiddish for us. Okay, Ata Moshel Begeus Hayam, what does it mean? You rule over the Geus, the Gaiva, the grandeur of the sea. David Melech is talking to Hashem. Hashem, you rule over the grandeur of the sea. Biso galav, when the waves, so, when they're not so, when they rise up, ata tishabchem. Now the Pashup Shad is what? When the waves rise up, Hashem, you put the waves in their place. They think they're going to rise up. And Hashem, you're tishabchem. You calm them. You knock them down. Right? Power of the ocean, you know? The ocean looks so powerful, the wave rises up, Hashem knocks it down. That's what David HaMelech is saying. Ata Moshel Begeos Hayam, Hashem, you rule over the grandeur of the sea. Bisoga love, when the waves lift up, Ata Tishabchem, you calm them down. You put them in their place. But Chavar, what else does Tishabchem sound like? You praise them. When the waves rise up, you praise them. Okay, so says Rav Huttner. Chavar, Ariel.
Tishabchem is their taich, du baru ix ze. Fragen Chazal, tavi kumt em epim as shavach is a lamed loib.
I don't know how to translate.
So Chazal want to know, Chazal are trying to understand, again, what's going on with this word tishabchem? Okay, let's see. Shteitim Chazal.
As dam is their shavach.
As dos
is their shavach. Fun di gli ayam.
Gale hayam. As dos is their shavach. Fun di gale ayam. This is the praise of the waves. What's so great about waves? Chazal say, I'll tell you what's so great about waves. That what?
Azai vesen dach az glech deim. Breg veln ze platzen. Aber fundestwegen kozman ze zenen in yam.
Tain? Is it Yiddish?
I don't know.
Tain ze ere.
And Zay Stormen.
And Zay Stormen.
No, what do Chazal say? What's the Shevach? What's the praise of the waves? Right? Do you figure out any of the words? How about platen? You guys know what platen means?
Yeah,
they're falling. They're falling, right? The praise of the waves is that what? That every time they try to rise up at their platen, they fall on their face again. Nonetheless, they continue to try to storm. They try to rise up again and they fall again. They try to rise up again and they fall again. And that's a shevach. That's a praise that they never give up. The waves don't have any yeyush. They keep trying. No? Vazhertismir. So what do we hear from this? What does it tell us? Az noch Pesach. What happens after Pesach? What do you take away from Pesach? Now keep in mind, this is a piece in Pach Yisrael on Purim. Rav Hutner says, after Pesach, yeah, all right, I'll go for it. Cheirus. After Pesach, we're still able to live, right? We're still Leibin mit Abyssal Cheirus. We're living with a little bit of what? Freedom. Pesach, we go free from its time. Is it good to feel free every day of our life? Sure. V'chol dor v'dor, in the words of the Baal Tanya, v'chol yom v'yom chayev adam liros es atmo kivu yosem Mitzrayim. So we take the chayrus of Pesach's gevaldik. We want to take that lesson with us for the road. Okay, let's go further.
Das hart is mer az nach shvus. Vel ich beleben mit abyssal Torah.
All right, so after shvus, it wouldn't be so bad if we left and we took a little Torah from the shvus Yom Tov experience. Okay? And vos hertismir. And what would it, how would it hurt us? How would it be bad? It wouldn't be bad. It wouldn't hurt us at all if what? Az nach Rosh Hashanah, vilich belaibin, mit abyssal yira. After Rosh Hashanah, we took a little bit of the what? Of the intensity of the davening, of the sound of the shofar. And vos hertismir, az nach Yom Kippur, vilich belaibin, mit abyssal tshuva. Wouldn't be so bad after Yom Kippur if what? We did a little tshuva every day of our life. That's also good. Was heret is mir after Sukkis, ich beleibin mit abyssal simcha, zman simcha seinu, Sukkis. So each of the holidays, we want to take the holiday with us. But chevra, you have to picture the scene. You got to close your eyes, even though I was never there and you were never there. We have to close our eyes and picture ourselves sitting at Rav Hutner's Purim Tish. Hutner drank a lot on Purim. And I'm sure it was very labadic over there. Rav Hutner would speak, Mamash mi umka deliba, he'd pour out his heart. So imagine Rav Hutner at the end of Purim, it's getting close to the end of Purim, and Rav Hutner screams out, Ozaber zvait zayin arachmanis, oz noch Purim velech belaibin mit abyssal adela yada. But Nebuch, a person, takes the drunkenness of Purim with him to what? To any place other than Purim. Lo aleinu v'lo aleichem. You want to take cheres from Pesach? Good. You want to take simcha from Sukkot? Great. You want to take tshuva from Rosh Hashanah, gevaldik. From Yom Kippur, gevaldik. Yira from Rosh Hashanah, great. All great. You want to take Torah from Shavuos, great. But if you take the adlo yada, if you take the drunkenness of Purim with you to the year, that's terrible. So now, hold on a second. So then what's the point of Purim? If it's not going to impact me, if I can't take it with me the next day, or I shouldn't take it with me the next day, so then what's the point of Purim? It must be that Purim is the ultimate what? There's actually so much here, which we're not going to go into now. But what does it mean? That means Purim is the ultimate what? Purim, I guess, is the ultimate Yom Tov of being in the moment. Purim is the ultimate Yom Tov of being in the moment, regardless of what? Of what's going to happen next. Right? I shouldn't be Purim-dik before Purim. I shouldn't be Purim-dik after Purim. But on Purim, I'm swimming in Purim. Mechayiv inish l'besumei. Bipuraya adlo yada binar. As some tzaddikim explained, not only do you get drunk on wine, you're supposed to get drunk on Purim. Besume bipuraya, to get drunk on Purim. Get drunk on Purim. You're supposed to be so immersed in Purim. But you don't take it with you. As das taka mein shvach, but that's the greatness of Purim. It's an all in, you go all in on Purim. It's an all in experience in the moment. Right? Ich was is es vet platzen. You know that Purim's going to come crashing down at the end. And yet, you know you can't take it with you. And you know it's going to be a mess to clean up the apartment after the Purim Suda the next day. Right? But that doesn't stop you. Knowing that that's going to happen, knowing that it's all going to fall apart, nonetheless, look what he writes here. Aber kol zman ich zitz beim tish, But the whole time I'm sitting by the Purim Tish, Rav Huttner says, I don't really care what happened before, I don't care what happens after. As long as I'm sitting here, storm ich, I will storm. I will storm. Bisog alav atate shabchein. That's the praise of the waves of the ocean. Did you not forget that you tried to rise up before and you fell on your face? Do you not realize you're going to fall on your face again? Right now I'm trying to rise up. That's the vard in the waves. That's the vard in the waves. The waves of the courage, I don't care what happened before, I don't care what's going to happen after. Right now, I'm going to try to rise up. That's the praise of the waves. So writes Rav Huttner, now, in one of the other svarim that we have of his writings called Reshimos HaLev, in source number 10. So Rav Huttner says, this is from the year, you can see in the middle of the right-hand paragraph, it says, Mishnas Tavshin Lamed Ches, from 1978. Okay, none of us were even in the world at the time. So Rav Huttner says, he quotes the Gemara in Bava Basra that we learned, that when Hordas made his base of Mikdash, he made it out of marble, and the marble looked like what? It looked like waves. And they wanted to what? They wanted to coat it. Originally he thought, maybe I'll coat it with gold. And then he realized, the Chavim told him, no, it's very good that it looks like waves. Why was it so good that it looks like waves? So just take a look at the last paragraph in source 10. Aval atam moshel begeyos hayam. No, let's not do that actually. Let's go three lines before that. Okay, the second line in the left-hand column of source 10. No, sorry. Let's just do the whole left-hand column in source 10. Middle of the first line. He quotes the Gemara in Bava Basra. You read the Gemara already. Uperesh sha'osal shem ha'asid. When a person makes a decision now based on what? Based on their future. Have ha'asid etzlo b'dayto lahova. So then he's bringing his future into the present. Va'osal shem ha'avar. When a person does something now based on his past. Havia over et slow bedaito lahova. Then he's bringing his past into the hova. Aval ha'osel shem ha'hova. But if I do based on the now, if I'm in the moment, if I allow myself to be, so to speak, present, and here, havia hova et slow lahova. Then the moment is truly the moment. You understand? How often are the decisions that I'm making in the moment based on yesterday or based on tomorrow? And the answer is too often. What does it mean to really be here now? It means to make my choice based on right now. People have cheshbonis. I missed shir yesterday, so I can't come to shir today. So that's called making a decision in the hove based on the avar. Or I can't come to shir today because I know you're starting a new sugya, and I know tomorrow and the next day I'm going to be not able to come to shir because I have a doctor's appointment and then I have a huge test. Right? So why should I come now? So that's called making a decision in the hove based on the asid. To be in the Hova Mamish, to make a decision in the Hova based on the Hova, that's a Madrega. Have a Hova at Slo La Hova. Mitam Shemesiach Daito Mishal Machar Mishal Esmol Mikovakol. Being in the moment means what? I'm able to remove from my mind what happened before and what happens after. The Hainu was what Rashi says, the notion of Bishas Chedvisa Chedvisa. At a time of joy is joy. Don't worry about what's going to happen after. It doesn't really matter what's going to happen after. Maybe I'm just thinking now, it's similar to something that was once said, but why do we break a glass under the chuppah? Oh, well, we have to remember, we're in context. We can't just be so much in the moment, right? We have to remember that. It's Chorban Beis HaMikdash. But some people are bothered by the fact that when we break the glass under the chuppah, the chassan puts his foot down, smashes the glass, and what does everyone say? Mazel tov. Right? So some people who are Masadar Kedushin, like what, that the Chassan should break it when he's singing Im Eshkachech. And then when it's over, then people say Mazel Tov. It's strange. He breaks a glass. I remember Chorban Beis HaMikdash, and then you say Mazel Tov. But maybe in some very deep way, what we're saying is, you know what? There was brokenness that came before. Globally, Chorban Beis HaMikdash, in everyone's personal life. And guess what, Chassan and Kala, I hate to break it to you, but guess what? There's probably going to be some brokenness in your marriage somewhere down the road. There's no marriage that doesn't have some challenges, some brokenness along the way. But you know what? You smash the glass, you're acknowledging the brokenness of the past, and even being merames to, you know, the brokenness of the future, because it has to happen, that's just how life is. But afal picha, mazal tov, right now. B'shas ched v'sa ched v'sa, mazal tov. Right now, we're chasin akal under the chuppah. You don't have to worry about that right now. Right now, let's be in the moment. So says Rav Hutner, our last paragraph, in source 10. Aval ata Moshe b'geis hayam b'sogalav ata teshabchem. He quotes our pasuk in Tehillim. Havi afilu yoiser mi b'shas chedva chedva. You know what's even greater than being in the moment? It's called being in the moment with the full awareness of what's going to come next and still being able to be in the moment. In other words, the wave knows. The wave knows it's going to crash. And that should give it every reason to not want to rise up. The praise of the waves of the sea. The wave knows it's not going to last. Right now, meaning, look how HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives kavod to the wave and it says to the wave, oh, good job. Come on, Hashem, who are you kidding? Why are you praising the wave? You know this wave is going to fall. The wave tried to rise up. The wave knows it's going to fall. Hashem, you know it's going to fall. And yet you're still saying, oh, look, a wave. What are you getting excited about? There's nothing to celebrate here. This whole thing's going to fall apart. Hashem says, no, that's not how I see it. I see it as what? I see it as, let's celebrate it while it is. And therefore, Krahivinu Rabbanan. So you know what Chazal said to Hordas? Did the rabbis know that Bayis Sheni was going to eventually fall apart? They did know that. They knew it wasn't going to last. They knew it wasn't going to last. They knew this Beis Hamikdash wasn't going to last. They knew this was not the final stop. They knew it wasn't going to last. Right? Look at Source 11. The Gemara in Maseches Yoma says that what was the difference between Bayis Rishon and Bayis Sheni? It darshens a pasuk in Chagai, referring to Bayis Sheni. It says where it's bolded, Chamisha Dvarim Shahayu Beis Hamikdash Rishon LeMikdash Sheni. These are five things that weren't present in Bayis Sheni. The Aron, the Kapores, the Kruvim, the Eish, the Shechina, the Ruach HaKodesh, the Urim V'Tumim. Bayis Sheni was missing a lot of stuff, spiritually. And the rabbis knew it wasn't going to last forever. And yet, they said to Hordas, they said, we still have to celebrate it. And they said, you know what, let's make it look like waves. Let's cover it in gold. No, don't cover it in gold. Let it look like a wave. Let it look like a wave, says Rav Hutner. The Rabbana knew that the binyan of Hordas, Shehu haya achron shabana v'bayis sheni, lo tiskayim, they knew it wasn't going to last. But why should that rob them from enjoying the moment? Let's celebrate what it is while it is. Leave it alone. Let it look like waves. It's gavaldik kvar, no? To be able to look at the Bayis Sheni at the same time, recognizing this is not going to last forever, but so what? We have it now. Yeah, but it doesn't have the Aron. The one thing about what we used to have, the Aron, we had the Kapayras, we had the Kruvim, the Eish, the Shechina, Ruach HaKodesh, Ruach HaTumim, we don't have anything. This is called Bayis Sheni. It's lacking all the holiness. Celebrate it for what it is. Yeah.
But can someone, if someone's going through a tough time, can't they think about the past?
Think back to a good time. Yeah, you can. This is talking about a person whose anxiety is the way Rabbi Nachman writes in his famous piece called Hayom, Hayom and Bekolot Yishmau. This is referring to a person who's getting stuck. He's getting stuck in the moment because of his anxieties of his past or his fears of the future. And that's making him not be able to function right now. And the praise of the wave is that the wave fell yesterday. The wave is going to fall in about 10 seconds from now. And yet, look how it still tries so hard because it wants to be close to Hashem. It wants to lift itself up. And Hashem says, I praise you for that. Hashem doesn't mock the wave for that. Hashem says, look at you right now. Look at you. You're so big. You're so tall. Wow, look at you. Look at you. You really picked yourself up. Even though you're about to fall apart again. That's the praise of the waves. Yes, Zachar Yitzchak.
I was going to ask, how could the Beit HaMikdash lack these very essential things?
Yeah, that's a great question. But it did. It did. It was not. It's called the Bayis HaGadol because it lasted longer, but in terms of quality, it was not Gadol. It was much worse. It was lacking in so much of the spiritual quality of Bayis Rishon. So you had every reason to say, this is not what it used to be. But they didn't say that. They said, let it look like a wave. And let's learn the lesson well of the waves. So Chever, now just to be Messiah and to answer our questions. Mishnah says in Pirkei Avos in source number 12, Arba Midos Beholchei Beis HaMedrash. There's four different types of Jews who come to Beis HaMedrash. The first category is Holech Ve'ino Osa Schar Halicha Biyado. if you come to Shir, or you come to the base and you talk to your chavrusa the whole time, and you don't even open the Gemara, that's also a Madrega. You know why? Because you showed up. This is Chazal talking. Holech ve'eno osa, if you come to the base magic, you don't do anything there, you get a cup of coffee and you sit in the back and you just, you know, that's also a Madrega. Because you're by association, you're saying, I want to be a base medrash guy. I want to be associated with the world of the base medrash. So, schar halicha biyado. If he's osav eino holech, if he learns outside the base medrash but doesn't go to the base medrash, then schar maisa biyado. Then he gets reward for doing, even though he didn't go to the base medrash, which is the optimal place to have the experience. Holech va'ose chassid. If he goes and he does, then he's a chassid. Lo holech v'lo osa rasha. If he doesn't go, he doesn't learn at home, doesn't learn in his dorm room, he doesn't come to the base ever, then he's a Rasha, then he's missing out on life. He's missing out on what it means to be a Jew. Now, I want to just mention very quickly, parenthetically, the Baal Shem Tov explained, and it's quoted in the Source 13, why is this last guy counted as one of the Holchei Beis HaMedrash? It says there are four types of people who go to Beis HaMedrash. The fourth category is a guy who doesn't go to Beis HaMedrash and doesn't learn at all. So what's his sheichest of... How is he called one of the categories of Holchei Beis Medrash? At least the guy who doesn't come to Beis Medrash but learns at home. He's one of the Holchei Beis Medrash because he learns at home. How is the guy who does nothing called Holchei Beis Medrash? So the Baal Shem Tov is quoted by the Kamarna Rebbe in his Parash on Pirkei Avos as saying that what? Because even the guy who doesn't come enhances the experience of the Beis Medrash. You know why? Because it reminds those who do show up that I'm making a choice by being here. Because not everyone chooses to be here. Not everyone chose to be here. There's a guy who's not here and he's not learning at all. I could have been that guy. So in the comparison or the contrast, he quotes the pasuk in Koheles, Ki Yisrona Or Menachoshech, the contrast of the light versus the darkness, right? He also enhances the Beis Medrash by being a, you know, not that we look down on him and get, you know, feel better because of him, but it's a reminder, I don't have to be here. I don't have to be here at all. I don't have to be here at all. And you know what the proof is? This guy's not here at all. Lo holech v'lo osa. And I'm here. And that enhances the experience in the Beis HaMedrash. But again, coming back to the one that I really want to focus on, the first one. Holech ve'eno osa, schar halicha biyado. A person who goes, but doesn't do. Or maybe he's trying to do and doesn't feel accomplished. Maybe he did try to learn, but he doesn't feel like he understood Rashi, or Tosos, or the Ritva, or the Rambam, or the Gemara, or anything. He still gets schar halicha. He still gets credit for what? For trying to go, for showing up. So now let's start to answer our questions. Go to the second to last source. Vayhi Avram ben Tishim Shana v'teisha shanam v'yera Hashem al Avram v'yomer elav ani kel shakai hishalech lefanai v'hayei samim. This is good stuff. Hishalech lefanai v'hayei samim. We said at the beginning that HaKadosh Baruch Hu, looks at the life of Sarah and says, like a tzaddik, like a tzaddikus, right? Kishem shehein tamimim, kach shneisim tamimim. And we said, what does it mean? What does tamimus mean? So if we look now here in Source 14, the pasuk in Lech Lecha, we understand. You know what tamimus is? His halech lefanai veheyei tamim. If you're walking before Hashem, if you're trying to walk with Hashem, if you're going, again, you could be the guy in the Mishnah Pirkei Avos who's going and not succeeding. He's a holech ve'eino osa. But he's trying to go. So Kadosh Baruch Hu says, that's called tmimus, ve'hayei samim. Sarah's life, kulan shavin letova. Her whole life was good. Really? There were no setbacks in Sarah's life? Sarah didn't have some major trauma in her life? Kulan shavin letova? What does that mean? But she's called tmimim. Her life's called tmimos. Because what? Because she's trying, because she's going. She's pushing ahead with her husband Avraham, who's also pushing ahead. There's a lot of opposition. There's a lot of setbacks. A lot of frustrations along the way. Avraham gets there to Israel. 2 seconds later, there's a famine in the land. He's off to Mitzrayim. There's a lot of ups and downs. Of course there are. But when a person is holy, when a person is steiging, when a person is trying, a person is showing up, if you're like that wave who tries to rise up, even if you fall back down, that's also Madrega. And now we understand why Esther got chizik from Sarah. Because think about Esther for a second. Says the Gemara in the final source, Megillah Tesvav Amud Beis, V'tamod b'chatzar Beis HaMelech HaPnimis. Esther is being dragged off to the Melech, and she's making her way to the palace, and she's approaching Achashverosh, and she's trying to save the Jewish people, and she's an undercover spy, and she's so badly outnumbered, and she's so badly taken advantage of. And Amr Bilevi, Kevin Shigil Lebes Hatzlamim, when she reached Achashverosh's Avodah Zarah, and she's making her way to the Melech, and she's surrounded by these idols, Nistalka Hemena Shechina. And she felt what? And she felt so incredibly alone because the Shechina departed her. She lost her connection, you know? Again, she's an undercover spy, but at least she's got that, you know, that little earpiece, so she's hearing messages from the base. All of a sudden, it gets cut off, and now she's alone. She's in the lion's den by herself. She has no connection. And she davens to Hashem, Amra, Keili, Keili, Lama Zavtani, Rebbeinu Shalom, why are you abandoning me at such a moment? No? So what are the choices for Esther now? You go forward, or you go backwards? You keep trying, or you give up the mission? What did Esther do? She went weiter. Was there a good chance she was going to fall on her face or get her head chopped off? There was a very good chance that both of the things could happen. Was there a good chance she'll make it worse for Klal Yisrael? There's a good chance. But she kept going. She was holich. She wasn't sure that she was oseh. She wasn't sure if she was, is this good, is this bad, is this helpful, is this not helpful. So Esther got chizik from Sarah. Esther says, you know what, these 127 provinces and the 127 years of Sarah, they are linked. Esther looked at Sarah's life and said, you know what, if Sarah was able to keep going, despite being kidnapped twice, despite struggling to have children, despite everything, she was a holich, she was like a wave that kept rising up, even though it kept getting beaten down every single time. So Esther said, I'll do like Mama Sarah. I'll do like Sarah used to do. And now, however, we understand why Rabbi Akiva, when his students were falling asleep and they were plotzing, and they were falling on their face, they were so tired because they were up late studying for a midterm. Now we understand, why did Rabbi Akiva say, why did he draw attention to Esther and to Sarah on their 127 years? Rabbi Akiva is trying to machazik the Talmidim as well. Rabbi Akiva says, come, try to pick yourself up. Ugh, Rabbi, I'm falling off my face. Try. Try to pick yourself up. Keep trying. That's the mahus of a Jewish person. What does it mean to live a life of tmimus? Tamim tiyam Hashem lokecha. Again, we first encounter in Lech Lecha. His halech lefanai. Try to go with Hashem. Again, even if like you're the Mishnah Pirkei Avos, holech ve'eno osa. Even if you're moving forward, but you feel like you're getting nowhere. Such a person still goes with the Kadosh Baruch Hu v'hayei samim. Hashem says, I celebrate that. And now we understand, last but not least, the Zohar. The Zohar looked at Sarah's life and said, when it says a big number, it says shana in small. When it says a small number, it says shanim in big. Because that which looks big is sometimes small, and that which looks small is sometimes big. Chaver, what's the pshat? The Zohar is telling us that you think you know which days... You think you know which days Hashem celebrates more? You think Hashem celebrates more the day that what? The day that you were got a good night's sleep and you came to shir and you followed the whole shir. Right, you took good notes and you said, oh, that was a big day. That was a very successful day. You think it's Rav, but in Hashem's eyes, nah. That makes sense. But the day that you felt small, the day that you weren't sure, you showed up late this year, you showed up even though you were tired, and you fell asleep for half this year, and you feel like that was a waste, that was a small success, Hashem says, not in my book. That was courageous. For you it was Zeir, but for me it was Rav. For me it was very big, says Hashem. You're like a wave that keeps trying. So that's the lesson of Sarah, that's the lesson of Esther, that's the lesson of the waves, that's the message of the structure of Vayis Sheni. That's the chizuk of the yam. Atzas Hashem hitakum. Just pick yourself up and keep going. And like Rav Huttner said, again, you know what's even more than b'shas chedvesa, celebrating the moment, being able to appreciate the moment, you're absolutely certain of what's going to come after. And you still say, but afal pichin, right now, I'm in the moment, and I'm making the choice. I'm making the choice to be with Hashem. I'm making the choice to try. That's a choice. Trying is a choice. Nope. Kolzman ich zit beim Tisch, as long as you're still sitting by the table. Storm ich. Your father says, after Purim, it's not going to be Purim anymore, brother. As long as it's Purim, let's let it be Purim. All right, let's hear Reb Zecharia. Yeah, it's because we have our own version of what we think is called success. We think the days that, you know, we were very engaged, and we were very much on time, and everything was falling into place. We'll say, oh, that was a big success. Hashem says, no, that's, in my mind, that's, you know, you look at a person who's really smart, who has a lot of success in Torah, you're like, wow, that guy's big in Torah. Maybe he's big in Torah, maybe, no, he's just actually, you know, kind of average in Torah based on his brain capacity. And maybe the person who's not as smart, who works hard and rises up, right? Even though he thinks of himself as small, he's not a big Rosh Hashiva. He's just a guy breaking his teeth trying to learn a Mishnah or trying to understand a single Tosos. He's not Rosh Shechter, he doesn't know every Tosos in Shas. So he feels small. But Hashem says, in my mind, he's very big because he's trying. He's working hard. You think you're small, but Hashem says, I don't see that as small. I see that as big. I see you as courageous and humble and willing to try. Hashem says, that's gewaldig. I celebrate that like a wave that's about to come crashing down on its face. Yeah. Exactly. That's right. And that's courageous. That's so easy for Avram to have been stuck because of his past and say, whatever, it's too late. Rabbi Kiva, it's too late. It's too late. Tzadikim don't give up. Sheva yipol tzadik v'kam. Okay, v'amich kulam tzadikim. So all of us can be those tzadikim as well. Okay. Shkoyach.